Welcome to Between Faith and Reason with Jeff Lawrence.
Welcome back to Between Faith and Reason. I'm your host, Jeff Lawrence, and today we're stepping into a conversation that hits every one of us right where we live. Parenting. Not the picture-perfect, filtered version, but the real thing. The moments when frustration rises quicker than we expected, the exhaustion that sneaks up on us, the nagging fear that we're not doing enough. And underneath it all, this quiet ache that whispers, there has to be more than just surviving the day. Parenting has a way of revealing us, our anxieties, our habits, our rhythms, our hopes, but it also has a way of forming us. And when we step back, when we lift our eyes beyond the noise and toward eternity, we realize that God is doing something in us as much as He's doing something through us for our kids. Today, I'm joined by a guest who lives right in the middle of that tension every single day. Doug Campbell serves as the Association of Christian Schools International, ACSI, where he leads initiatives that help schools strengthen biblical worldview formation, spiritual formation, and home partnerships. He has spent decades equipping teachers, leaders, and families to see education not just as information, but formation. It's a heart work. He's a dad, a leader, a seasoned educator, and a passionate voice for helping parents anchor their homes in the truth of God's Word. Together, we're going to talk about what it means to overcome frustration, when the eternal perspective matters more than ever, and how everyday moments, from the chaotic mornings to the bedtime conversations, are shaping the souls of the next generation. So no matter what you're doing today, maybe you're working out, maybe you're driving, take a breath. Slow your pace for a few moments. This is a conversation filled with honesty, hope, and anchors for your journey. So let's jump right in. Hello and welcome back to Between Faith and Reason. Jeff Lawrence here. So excited to have you back with us. And today I am just excited about the topic, but also grateful for a friend who has joined us, Doug Campbell. He is an incredible father, husband, leader. He's on staff, and we'll talk a little bit more about what he does with ACSI and a little bit about more about what ACSI is. But Doug, welcome to Between Faith and Reason.
Thanks, Jeff. Honored to be here, man.
Great to have you here. Today, we are talking about parenting. So all of those parents out there, you're driving the car right now, you're working out, you got your AirPods in, and you're rethinking your life, or you're looking for wisdom, you're looking for truth, you're looking for guidance. And parenting, both Doug and I are parents, although at different parts of our life, I guess you would say, different times of our life. I've got older ones, he's got younger ones, but today we want to talk about it because there's never been a season quite like the season we're living in right now. And there's so much competing for our kids, not only their attention, but the souls of our kids. And we don't think that there's enough that we can actually talk about and begin to process that we can really encourage parents to become bought in and engaged with their kids. Doug, let's talk a little bit about it. Tell us a little bit about your family, about your kids, and then even if you want to kick us off, what are some of the things you guys face? And as a dad, you can speak as a dad, right? So just sure. Pop in, man.
Yeah, like Jeff said, I'm Doug Campbell. I'm in Greenville, South Carolina. I'm married to my wife, Abigail, and we have four boys. Hudson, who is 6, Emmett, 5, Grayson, who's 3, and then Logan, who's 1. So we're in the throes of it right now. It's an exhausting time. It's a chaotic time, but it's also a fun time. And you know, I think when I think about art, I kind of think about just the rhythms of life and all walking through and all that we're trying to get the boys involved in. I think the big thing for us that we always have to kind of push back against is just the busyness of life. So much of the culture is saying, hey, get involved in this and do this and play every sport and join every club and be a part of all these things. And yet, I think for us, we always got to try to say, hey, there's going to be certain things that we're going to have to say no to. There's going to be certain things that we're able to do. We do want our kids to learn and experience things and grow. But at the end of the day, the most important thing about our family is that we're together, that we're not so fragmented because we're involved in so many things that we lose the unity and the community that is so great about being a part of a family. So I definitely feel that pull. I think another piece of that pull that we feel is just entertainment. Kids really want to watch these movies and they want to have devices. And so we allow them to kind of view those things and have those things, but we're very guarded on how we do it. They have boundaries with those, they have screen time with those things. So yeah, hey, we want to teach you how to use it well, but we also want you to know that this is not your entire life, that there's something much more to life than you being on a screen or you watching a movie. So there's always a balance that we're trying to work through on all those things, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So there's so much competing for our kids' attention today. And you just mentioned a couple of things, one of them being technology. Our kids today, they're spending more and more screen time. And as they're spending the screen time, there's something that's happening with our kids. And we've actually talked about it on Between Faith and Reason. And Jonathan Haidt wrote this book called The Anxious Generation. And that's really the whole premise, is the introduction of technology and how that's changed and rewired our kids' minds. And I think for some parents, I was just a couple of days ago, we were out at a restaurant and I watched a family come in and mom and dad were sitting there having a conversation, at least for a moment, and all the kids were on their either tablets, which mom and dad gave them the tablets, or a phone just to give them something to do. And I think that's where the problem lies, is they're not getting it on there. The parents are giving it to them. So why don't we talk just a moment, maybe a little bit about the dangers of technology, the dangers of it being introduced too soon. And social media, of course, is part of that. And kids are finding their way into social media earlier and earlier now. So why don't we talk a little bit about that? Because if we don't recognize the danger that's in technology as parents, I think we're really placing our kids at risk. So let's talk about that.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm going to butcher this quote, but there's a C.S. Lewis quote, and he says something along the lines of, the most dangerous thing about the culture is what we call normal. And it's, again, I butcher the quote, but what he's trying to get at is this point that when something is now seen as normal, a lot of times that can be very dangerous within the culture, because everyone's just doing it because now it's considered normal. Rewind to when I was in high school as a senior. For me, that's when the first iPhone came out. So that was 2006, 2007, the first iPhone came out. Now, before that, I had the typical little phone with the, you had to text all the numbers and everything. And it just completely changed the culture to where now, at that time, it wasn't normal to have a smartphone. But now, you're weird if you don't have a smartphone. So there's just this trend that's taken place within the culture. And what happens is it begins with us as adults. It trickles down to our kids. And I think a lot of this, too, begins with adults. Even asking the question of, how are we using technology? How are we using social media? Are we stewarding it well? Are we spending too much time on it? Are our kids seeing us with our faces more on our phones rather than our eyes looking at them, right? Do we have the devices at the table? Are we going to dinner with the devices? Are we watching the TV rather than listening to them? So a lot of it starts with us. And so even as parents, we have to say, hey, is this thing consuming my life? Is it becoming everything? Is my world revolving around this thing? Am I staring too much at this and too little kids? But so I think that's the first thing. What we, if they see it modeled from us, a lot of times they're going to pick it up. That's the way I use a phone. And that's the way I use a TV. And that's the way I yell at the TV when things don't go well during daddy's football game or whatever it may be. But I think for our kids, we have to really help them have some of that balance. And even from an early age, create some of those boundaries. And I saw the same thing you mentioned, Jeff. I was at a restaurant 2 weeks ago, and it was the exact same scenario. And a little bit of me just was a little bit heartbroken over it, because you've got two parents that are on their devices. You've got two kids that are on their tablets. And yeah, it may be the easy thing to do to keep the kids pacified, but you're missing out the opportunity of presence. Like, you're completely looking at, right, down at your phone rather than looking across the table at your kids. You're neglecting the conversation. You're neglecting the presence. You're neglecting these opportunities to speak life to one another, to learn about your kids, for them to learn about you. So you're just completely neglecting this thing that we were created for, to have these face-to-face personal interactions with people. And the phone, social media, technology gives us kind of a version of that, but it's not the true version of that. It's almost a counterfeit version of communication and the personal interaction that we're supposed to have. And so it feels like we're communicating. It feels like we're engaging. It feels like we're connecting. I think there's a quote out there, or maybe it's a stat, that this generation, maybe Gen Z, Gen Alpha, but they're the most connected generation, yet they're the most isolated and lonely generation. That they have this idea that, yep, they're connected, but in reality, they're really not, because they're not having personal face-to-face conversations. So even with our kids in our house, like I said, we give them some screen time. They get a certain amount of screen time per day, but we have to help them understand there's boundaries. And when it comes to dinner time, there's no phones at the table, right? There's no devices at the table. We're sitting at the table together. We're asking questions. Hey, what's your favorite thing from the day? What was your least favorite thing from the day? How are you learning? What's going on at school? What are things that are challenging for you? And we're having these conversations. And even though it doesn't seem like a huge deal at the time, I know those little seeds that we're planting over time will really cause our family to grow, will bring us together, give that community feel that we really want to have. Technology has its place, but we got to be very careful on how we're using it, especially within the rhythms and the everyday routines of our family.
And that makes so much sense. So much sense. And I think the option for parents being passivity regarding technology is very dangerous. And I the reason I say that is because our role as parents is to raise our kids. In other words, to teach them and to mentor them, right? It's not only to teach what is true and good and beautiful, which is a whole nother podcast, but is also to model it. It's model it for them. And what's happening with technology is there's a whole different thing that's being modeled. There's a whole different worldview. There's a whole different set of ideas, ideologies, if you will, that's being modeled for them through technology. And if we're passive about it, then what we're actually doing is we're giving somebody else the keys to the car. We're giving somebody else the right to raise our kids, and we don't even realize it, Doug, until it's too late. And when I say too late, I mean by the time you've been in the academic school world, same thing for me. By the time they reach middle school and high school, you're gonna have a hard time trying to get back the ground that you have given up. It's going to be more increasingly difficult to regain that ground. So my encouragement to those who are listening is you need to look at technology not as a help at all, but actually as a problem and a threat in many ways. And then you need to behave accordingly. So I love what you said.
Yeah,
we had the same thing
in
our family.
Can I add one thing there as well? But one thing that I think technology does as well is it causes our kids, and us as well, to look more inward. And what it can really do is it can create this idea that I'm at the center of the universe, that I get to choose what I play. I get to choose what I watch. I get to choose what I browse, that I get to do these things, right? We have the iPhone. It's interesting why it's called the iPhone. It's this thing that was created everything. It's all about us. It's all about me. So what it does is, it's taken us, not only physically do our eyes go down and look at the screen, and we're no longer looking out in the way that we're supposed to look out, that there's something that's bigger than ourselves. But when we're limiting our entire life to this little 4-inch screen, we're completely missing out on all that is in store for us. We're completely missing out on the nature around us. We're completely missing out on the people that are around us. We're completely missing out on the story that we're a part of and the purpose that we have because we're so connected to our technology and our phones. So even there, there's a great danger as well when it comes to technology.
Yeah, that's a counterfeit world. It's not the real thing. I call it your Instagram life. Yeah. Everybody's looking at your Instagram life, which it would appear that your life is perfect, or maybe you're watching reels or whatever it might be. It's you're looking at perfection, which is not truth. And you hit on it. You're missing this beautiful world that God created. You're missing out on so much. And your kids don't know that, but as a parent, you do. We do. And so it's time for us to parent. It's time for us to set those aside. Now, one of the things that you said a second ago that I would love to come back to is you said, I don't know if you said it this way, but the ministry of presence or presence, being truly present. And I will tell you, in conversations with at least middle school and high school kids, and I know this occurs in lower school as well, when we really have an honest conversation about what they desire, what they want most, where do you want to go to college? What do you want to be when you grow up? What are the things you're chasing after? How sports working out for you? How arts, singing in this, playing in this? And it always comes back to you, Doug, always comes back to you. The kid says, really, I just want my mom and dad to see me.
Yeah.
I want them to see me and I want to be with them. So it's visual. I see you. I'm with you. In other words, presence, what you just said, that's what presence is, right?
Yeah.
And then the other part is time. Time is equal to love and value. So I think that's an important thing. Let's talk about it as a dad. What does presence mean for you?
Yeah, man, this is an important one. And this is something that I've learned over the years of being a father, being a husband. I've seen it work out. I've seen it in people's lives as a cautionary tale that you have certain dads that I've seen and that I've known that spend so much of their time in a job, pursuing a career, and maybe for good intentions because they want to provide for their family or they want to make sure there's food on the table. Those are important things. But I think what I've seen is that presence is more important than your pocketbook. And what I mean is that you being there for your family and being present for your family is actually more important than what you can provide for your family. Now, again, that culturally, I'm supposed to get up every morning and go to work and provide. Of course, you do all those things. But I think sometimes people get too focused on the career and too focused on here's what I've got to provide and here's what I got to do, that they miss out on actually the time spent with family, the time spent with their kids, the time spent with their wife. And so this is not a call to quit your job and stay at home, okay? Everybody understands that. Don't hear what I'm not saying. But I think it is a call to really remember that the most important thing that we can provide as dads and as husbands to our kids and to our wives is presence, to be there, to spend quality time with them, to love them, to cherish them, to discipline them, to bring consequences when we need to bring consequences, to encourage, to speak life, to pray the positive, to praise the positive, whatever it may be. I really believe, and as I've talked to people about this, even people that I work with, when I'm talking to them and we're talking about kids, we're talking about family. They've even told me before, hey, you know what? If I could go back and do it all over again, I probably would have not stayed at the school so long. I would have got home sooner. Like most people, when they look back on the 20 past years of their life, or they look back on the end, are not saying, man, I really wish I would have worked more and put more hours in and made more money. A lot of times the regret is I really wish I would have spent more time with my family and with my kids. Because even though these pursuits weren't necessarily evil or wrong, these pursuits distracted me from what was most important. And so that's something that I'm not perfect at it, still a work in progress, but it's something that I think about that, hey, I am more important for my family than what maybe I can provide for my family, that my presence is the best provision for my family and helping them to grow and helping and making sure that I'm leading them the way that I'm called to lead them. Yeah.
Welcome back to Between Faith and Reason. Jeff Lawrence here. So glad to have you back with us today. We have an incredible topic. If you are a parent, if you have little kids, older kids, it doesn't matter. We hope that you'll tune in because we want to talk a little bit about parenting. And I want to welcome, as you heard in the intro, I want to welcome Doug Campbell. He is with us, an incredible leader, father. He has a bunch of kids, small kids. We'll be able to offer a lot of perspective and some guidance, and it's great to have him with us. He's on staff with ACSI, which you heard in the intro, and I've had an opportunity to get to know him some and hang out with him some, and just really grateful for his perspectives. Doug, welcome to Between Faith and Reason.
Thank you, Jeff. It's good to be here, man. Good to be with you. Really excited about this.
Yes, me too. Me too. So today we want to talk about parenting and really parenting from the standpoint of this is a weird time to be parents. It's a strange season. It's a strange culture in which we find ourselves. And I say that from the standpoint of, man, things are so different when I was growing up. And actually, I have a 21-year-old and a 25-year-old, and it's so different from even when, in 10 years ago, when they were smaller, 15 years ago, when they were much smaller, the world in which we live is very different from even then. Mm. And so I'll talk to some things, having kids who are a little bit older, and Doug's going to speak to some things a little bit, having younger kids. But so with this crazy culture that we live in and attempting to be a dad and a mom and raise our kids to not only be healthy, to not only be healthy from the standpoint of emotionally, spiritually, but to also prepare them to live well in the world that is changing on a weekly basis almost. Doug, why don't we talk a little bit about, we're facing a lot of things that we can talk about culturally, but just as a dad, you have these kids, you look around, you're watching the news, there's a lot of things for us to be troubled about, and we'll get into some of that probably later, but talk to us about being a dad and raising some youngins in this very strange time that we find ourselves in.
Yeah, absolutely, Jeff. So I've got four boys, 6 and a half and younger. So we've got a 6.5-year-old, a 5-year-old, a 3-year-old, and a 1-year-old. So it's controlled chaos. It is, I will say this, as a dad, parenting is one of the most rewarding and, can I say, frustrating things at the same time. There's always that tension and that balance. In this world that we live in, even since I was in high school and in college, has just changed drastically. The iPhone came out when I was a senior in high school, which was 2006, 2007. And even since then, which was not that long ago, things have just changed so much. There's just been this constant cultural fluidity. There's been redefining of certain things that had been normal, that had been the same for so long. And so we, being a dad, being a husband, being a parent in this culture, it presents a lot of challenges. You really got to help your kids navigate in a tough world, in a difficult world, in a world that's full of distraction, in a world that's constantly trying to grab their attention, in a world that is full of technology and entertainment. It's just baked into the cake of the culture that we're around. So we really, as been a wife, my wife and I, we seek to always think through, hey, how are we spiritually forming our kids in the midst of this culture? How are we trying to keep some of the traditional values and traditional mindset of the way in which we grew up and she grew up and our parents grew up, and really instill some of those values and those character traits within our kids even today? There's a lot of truth that we can learn from, not only from scripture, but just the people who have came before us. So how can we help them be countercultural in the midst of their culture that we're raising them in?
Yeah, so that always starts at home, right? The thing I think about is conversations that I'm having and have had, just current conversations with parents. Of course, I'm on staff, a director of spiritual development at Foundation Academy here in Winter Garden. And so I have conversations all the time with parents. Mm-hmm. sometimes those conversations are, hey, we don't quite understand when you say biblical worldview. We're trying to wrap our mind around that, exactly what it is. But what we can tell you is it's uniquely different and totally separated from what we're seeing in other places where we've had our kids, in other schools, which operate off of a different ideology that's become more and more apparent. So we don't, but we want them here because we sense that we need to take a bold step as parents. Then you have other parents who go, you know what? There's a lot of competing ideologies out there, and we're teaching our kids. We want you to reinforce it. So I think as parents, we have to realize that there are forces out there. There are other people who have a different way of thinking about how to raise a child, about what a child should hear, about what they'd understand, about what they should be introduced, at what age they should be introduced to it, and it becomes their responsibility to do it, taking some of that responsibility away from the parents, whether they agree or not. And so I don't think this is a season for parents to be passive. I think this is a season for, right, for mom and dad to be dialed in and be present.
That's right. Yeah. Being a part of a Christian school, I was raised in a Christian school, and then I worked for a Christian school for a long time, and now I'm working for a Christian school organization. So I've been in this world for some time. And I remember even at the school that I went to and then became an employee at, that we had several parents who just thought, hey, you guys are going to raise my kids, right? You're going to do all the heavy lifting and the hard work. And so we always reminded them, and even it was a part of our mission statement as a school, that we assist parents in coming alongside them to help them to glorify God and to make disciples. So we want to understand as parents, like, this is my primary responsibility. Like, I'm called to this. God has not only called me to this, he's equipped me for this. And so I have to be able to take up that. It's a huge responsibility. And I think I have to always remember that there's grace in this process, that no parent is perfect. God is the only perfect parent, right? He parents the way that we should all parent, right? Yet we know every day that we don't, and we don't always reflect that. And so even though it's difficult, it doesn't mean that I just need to absolve responsibility. It doesn't mean I need to abdicate my place as a parent. I do need to be the one in my kid's life that is speaking truth to them, that is helping them to navigate the issues that they're walking through. Yeah, I want to let them fail. And yeah, I want them to build a muscle of resilience, but I also need to be there to support and encourage them along the way and help them just to really understand what is true, what is false, what is beautiful, what is ugly. And as they kind of walk through this life, I'm giving that wisdom, I'm giving that guidance, and I'm providing that support as they're also, as they develop, learning to understand what those things are as well. So just to come alongside them. And it takes time. And I know we'll talk about this as we talk through the parenting, but it's a long game. Parenting is a long game, just like discipleship is a long game. It doesn't happen overnight. It doesn't happen in a season. It doesn't happen in a year. It's little steps along the way. And it's planting those seeds, just doing what we believe is right as a family. And our kids will pick up on that. They'll not only hear what we say, but they're also going to see the way we live those things out. And over the long stretch of time, we really trust that process, that the Lord is at work in their lives. He's working through us. He's teaching us. And as he's teaching us, we're also able to teach them. So I would say to all parents, even who are listening, hey, this is the time to really, like you said, Jeff, step up. This is the time to read. This is my role. This is my responsibility. I got a school that will help me. Maybe you are in it and is also helping you. Maybe you're part of a community that's going to help you in this thing, because it takes a village to raise our kids. We know that. We have to understand that this is the role that I've been given. So how can I steward my kids well? How can I love them? How can I cherish them, protect them well, and so on and so forth. But I digress.
No, you're right on it. So I saw some statistics recently that it was surprising that by the time our kids are 16 years old, I thought at one time it was 18, but it's by the time they're 16 years old, you've spent 95% of the time, their overall time that you will spend with them by the time they're 16. Because by the time they're 16, what happens? They get their car. They become more independent. They're going, they're hanging out with their friends more. They're coming into their senior year. They graduate. They go off to college. You have less and less and less time, and it falls off exponentially. So a lot of what you're saying there is, and I think we're saying together, is that be present now. Be present now, because you only have a finite amount of time with your kids in order to walk with them, to love them, to express truth to them, to mentor them, to, if you will, disciple them. And so I think if parents will just really stop and think, wait a minute, this is tough. The days are short. Sorry, the days are long. The years are short.
Is
this day ever going to end? And oftentimes we find ourselves wishing away all of our todays for a better tomorrow. I can't wait till we get to vacation. I can't wait till school gets back in. Can't wait till school gets out. Can't wait till, and we're always wishing away. We do it also in other ways that I hope that we have time to get into, but let's camp on that for just a second, because if we only have a finite amount of time and we've spent 95% of it by the time they get to 16, then why are we abdicating our responsibility as parents to technology and social media and entertainment that comes in through that technology, whether it be gaming, whether it be on a tablet? Why are we abdicating our presence, our responsibility to raise our kids and be with them and be present to technology? And I think, Doug, there's an innate danger to that, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I think there's a couple of reasons. I think one thing is, if we're not careful, it's so easy for us to drift. So whatever the culture is doing, it's just so easy to fall in line. That's been the age old thing. Like, you just follow the crowd, right? The idea of peer pressure, right? Everyone else is doing it. The parents, there's still peer pressure for us as well. Everyone else is doing it. All those parents are doing that with their kids. And that kid had a cell phone when he's 7. So therefore it must be okay for me to give my kid a cell phone when he's 7. And it just makes no sense. We always want to think through, how can we be countercultural? What are those things in culture that we can say, hey, these are good and these are true and these are things worth pursuing? And then what are those things that we as parents just have to draw the line and say, no, this is not something we're going to step into. This is not something we're going to entertain. This is not something that we're going to get close to the line on and hopefully not fall over that line. So I see things like technology. You see it all. You go to a restaurant, and you've got parents and you've got kids, and they're all on the tablet. Their heads are all down and they're completely missing this opportunity to look up and communicate with one another. And they're so wrapped up in their own worlds. They're so wrapped up in technology. And what happens is it can really distract. And I will say the other reason, I think too, that a lot of parents maybe fall into this, it is easy, right? Like, easiest. Hand my kid a tablet or hand them a phone or turn on the TV and say, hey, I've got things I got to do. I just need you to watch this right now. And I know even for us as parents in my house, like, there are moments where we fall into that. I get that. But overall, the pattern of our lives, we never want to say this tablet is better for my kid or me right now because it makes things easier. Maybe it does relieve some kind of burden. But what it does is it opens up a whole nother set of issues. And so I think we really got to step into this role that we've been given and fight against the culture and say, hey, even though everyone around us is doing this, because even our kids are going to ask that. I mean, I've got a 6.5-year-old who's already asking me certain questions because he's got friends at school that play this certain game or that have a phone or whatever it may be. And he's already asking me questions of, hey, when am I going to get a phone? And I'm like, maybe when you're old enough to drive, I'll let you have a phone because that way you can communicate with me. And even then, there's going to be no social media on that phone. So we have to navigate through those things, and yet we always want to say, we're not going to do what everyone else is doing. But if we're not careful, we allow the culture to just have this constant drip, and we begin to think through, hey, what is the culture doing? And that maybe is what I should do as well, because we don't want to be the uncool parents that don't give their kid a tablet or don't give their kid a phone. And so there's this cultural pressure, and I think it's just comfortable and it's easy.
Yeah. I think we have to wrestle with the dangers. If there's this cultural pressure to give these tablets to our kids, to give technology, whatever, to our kids, we also have to wrestle with the danger. And the science is pretty clear. In fact, in one of the earlier episodes, we talked about The Anxious Generation, written by Jonathan Haidt. And it's very clear that starting in, 2006, 2007, with the birth of the iPhone, the smartphone, if you will, that all of a sudden we begin to see that there were these trends that are not good trends. So there was exponential growth in anxiety, depression, hopelessness that were hitting kids, adolescents. And so now we find ourselves even on a trend that's growing and growing, and it's almost as if we don't have access to this information to tell us this. And the problem, I think, Doug, is if we were to really admit it, is the kids have a problem with technology because mom and dad have a problem with technology, right? Yeah. So if we were really honest, I think mom and dad, I'm going to tell you, I've had to wrestle with it. I have one of my kids sends me a reel, it's a funny reel, something that, like my son, he'll send me something that's absolutely hilarious. But what happens after I watch it? I watch the next one. And then I watch the next one. And then I'm caught in this vortex. And then something grabs my attention, and I look up from my phone, and it's already affected my eyesight because I've been looking at it so long. And then it's like, this huge amount of time has passed, and I'm watching these stupid reels. Yeah. Like the last one that he sent me was a cow with the big lips going moo. I mean, dumb. It's completely dumb. I can't get that time back. But what comes at our kids and comes at us is not always innocent. It actually is changing us. And that's why mom and dad, listen, we're with you. We're wrestling with the same thing. But listen, if the trends are that depression and anxiety, and by the way, also suicide, are growing exponentially, then that trend is also going to affect us. Mm-hmm. We're going to find ourselves within that sample rate of that trend. And come on, let's do something about it. Why don't you talk, because I know you've shared with me before about maybe some of the things that you do as a family to control that with your little ones.
Yeah, just a couple of things. For example, when they get home from school, they will get a little bit, this is just a practical thing, they'll get a little bit of screen time. So they have a timed amount of time that they can be playing. They play the Nintendo Switch, or they might be on an iPad. Really practically, that iPad, they can't download anything unless there's permission from us. It does not connect them to the internet in any kind of way. So they don't have any access to those things. The video games are any games that we have approved, that we have bought, that we have allowed them to have. And then another thing that we've done, even with my two older ones, when they play, we really encourage them to play together, to where even when they're on using technology, it's not an isolated thing where, hey, this is my time with my screen and my room. Like we want them to actually be doing it together, because even though, yeah, they play a game, when they're doing it together, there's some community there. There's some camaraderie there that they do enjoy this, but we always want this to be a thing that's a community-driven thing. When it comes to TV, when it comes to movies, TV shows, they have certain times where they can watch those kind of things, and there's certain times where we say, hey, there's no screen time. But we always want to do that in a community space. And so this becomes kind of this rhythm that even when we are using technology, we're using technology as a family. We're using technology together. It's not just you and your time away from everyone doing this thing. It's happening in the context of community. You just made a comment. Well, so much of what we see in entertainment and in technology and movies, like these ideas that are out there, they're not static, right? They're not just neutral ideas. They're dynamic. They're doing something. And even the advertisements that will come up. My kids are watching a movie on Disney, and that can be a whole another conversation altogether, right? On just the idea of Disney. They're watching a movie on Disney. I think it was like Wreck-It Ralph. And Disney has this thing now where you can pay extra to have no ads, or you can just pay the typical subscription to have 15-minute ads. You know how they do it? They like to nickel and dime like crazy. But this ad comes up, and it was a Gap commercial. And it's six women wearing jeans dancing on the screen in their new jeans. And I'm like, what in the world? I've got four boys that are in the room. Now, one of them doesn't know what he's seeing because he's a year old, but I've got a 6.5-year-old. Like, I really don't want him seeing them. And so you have to make these decisions. Okay, hey, how are we going to draw the line here? What are we going to do in the midst of this? How are we going to communicate that, hey, maybe this is not something we need to be watching, or we need to be careful on what they're seeing? So it as a parent today, it is difficult. I get it. It's difficult for us. We're always navigating it, not always perfectly. But I think creating those rhythms, creating that balance, and saying, hey, this is a proper way to use technology. Because even as they get older, when they get in high school, when they get into college, when they become adult, like you said, they're going to be using technology. I mean, I work remote. I'm using technology all the time. So I, in myself, have to say, hey, here are some boundaries on how I'm using my phone, how I'm using my computer, how we're watching TV. We need to model that for them so they at least have a healthy boundary for how to use and how to consume technology and entertainment.
Yeah. This past summer, we were in Glacier National Park, and we had no cell coverage. And we had no Wi-Fi for most of the trip. So I kid around with people and say, hey, I didn't know what was going on. I didn't know what was happening in the country. I didn't know if the Russians had invaded. I didn't know if California had fallen into the sea. I didn't know anything. And I'm telling you, man, at first, when we first got there, it's like, oh, man, you know, what if something happens? You know, the kids are over here. You got family. What if they need to get us? Because that's the first thing you come to is convenient. But as the week went on, it was almost like this release, this rest, this peace that I didn't want to pick. I didn't want to pick it back up again. I didn't want to go back. And I think the problem, and I know we're spending a lot of time on technology here and social media, and I think it's worth that. Yeah. But just that one last thought, that is, if we would just deal with our own addiction as parents, as adults, if we would just admit it. And you know what? Yeah, I probably on it too much. Yeah, these stupid reels, whatever it is, my perfect Instagram life, people posting everything on Instagram, and it looks like they live a perfect life, which is not true, which is part of the problem with adolescence when they see everybody else living this certain way. And I'm not that pretty, or I'm not that good in sports, or I'm not this Mr. Popular. And they're always comparing. That's a whole nother level. That's a problem, parents. But so the encouragement here is finding ways to detach. And I told this one guy, one dad this past week, tell me, because he was talking about his phone and talking about, I said, tell me, is it ever out of your reach when you get home from work? Is it ever out of your reach? Just think about it. At dinner, where's your phone? It's in my pocket or it's on the table. Okay. When you go up to the shower, where is it? It's not in the shower, right? Where is it? Yeah, it's right there on the counter. Okay. When you come down, what do y'all do? Y'all watch TV or something? Yeah. Where is it? Well, it's on the couch with me. Okay. When you go to bed, where is it? When you go to bed, it's on the dresser. I use it as an alarm clock. Oh, yeah. You can get a $5 alarm clock on Amazon, by the way. That's the problem. And I think we can all identify with that. So this isn't in any way trying to be demeaning. It's actually encouraging that, hey, we've got a problem. We all tend to have this problem. Why don't you try setting it down when you get home from work? Just baby steps, right? Put it up on your dresser, turn it over, let it charge, and don't go back and check it. My boss might begin, hey, it's after hours. You need to be present, which we can talk about here in a second. But just experiment with it. And then if you are doing it as a parent, if we are doing it as an example, it becomes much easier to help our kids do the same.
Yeah. One story to just add to this. I know we can change subjects and talk about something different. When I was working at school in Georgia, I had an opportunity to go to Jamaica a couple of times on a mission trip. So I led the trip two times. It was a group of 20 to 25 high school students. One of the policies for that particular trip, with it being a mission trip, is we took their phones before they got on the plane to leave. We told them that ahead of time. Now, when we first told the parents and the students, it was like jaws drop. Like, seriously? How am I going to get in touch with so-and-so? It was like, well, the leaders are going to have their phones. You need to call us. We'll let them call you, whatever. But they're not going to have their phones on this trip. And it was so refreshing. This is also an encouragement for those parents who I think have some older kids who are walking through all this. The highlight of the trip for so many, outside of just being with the kids that we were working with and doing the work that we were called to there, the highlight was that they were so relieved to not have their phones for a week. And we didn't tell them to say those things. But when they got back to school and they did, they talked and gave kind of a testimony that they kept bringing up. It was not necessarily the work they did in Jamaica. They kept bringing up this idea, hey, we didn't have our phones for a week. And it was great. And we did not coach them to say that. We did not pay them to say that. That's what they said, to where the high school principal is next to me during chapel. He's like, man, we need to do this for all of our mission trips. I was like, yeah, we should. A great way for them just to disconnect. So I think our kids, and I think Jonathan Haidt talks about this in his book, that there's statistics out there that say even those who are 14, 15, 16, 17, they want to disconnect from their phones, but they just feel right. like they don't That's know right. how to, or they can't. And so just be encouraged by that, that when you do disconnect them from it, when you take it away for a little bit, like it's actually a refreshing thing to where they can really live the way they're meant to live. So just be encouraged by that if you're listening.
That's right. And again, mom and dad, you lead the way.
That's right.
Just lead the way. You could even go on vacation and you could even have a vacation from your phone.
That's right.
And just be like, we're all agreeing to it. We're all putting our phone in here. Dad's going to check it for emergencies only, just to see if he missed any calls, right? From emergency purposes only. But it's going to go in this drawer and we're all going to be off of it for X amount of time. And it's going to be painful on the front end. It's going to be like, I don't think I can do this. And then all of a sudden it's, wow, I didn't know this world existed.
That's right. Yep.
I didn't know I can have this depth of conversation with my spouse. I didn't know I could spend this much time with my kids and not be worried about going and checking my phone. So there's more to talk about. So one of the things I want us to bridge into is we've got technology and we've been abdicating the responsibility of raising our kids, of mentoring our kids and leading our kids. We've abdicated that to technology and social media. So that's got to change. We've got to address that. But in its response to that, I want us to talk about being present with our kids and take social media out of just being present. And I'll start it with this example. I remember years ago when my kids were small and I came home, and it wasn't about technology at that point. I was tired. I was spent. I'd been dealing with putting out fires. It's years of ministry. I know that would surprise you, but just dealing with stuff. And I would get home and I would just be spent. And so I would, in my own way, would make excuse for my lack of engaging at the level that my kids and my wife wanted me to be, because I was just spent. And one day I was just really convicted about this, because I had an older gentleman was talking to me, and he said, Jeff, how do you define success? And I was like, man, we've got these cool things happening in the church, and we've got this cool thing that we're working on over here. Type A guy, hey, and we've got vision and mission, and we're moving, and these cool things happening. And I said, so excited about that, and the family. And he's listening to me, and he goes, you know how I defined the success? How I define success? And this guy was like a millionaire. And I heard this said again. He said, I define success, and that when my kids are grown, they want to be with me. When my kids are grown, they want to be with me.
Scared.
And I sit there, I'm listening to him, and I'm like, okay, I think I just got, I was taken to the woodshed here.
Yeah, because, good
punch. Yeah, because what he was saying to me is all that stuff doesn't matter in comparison to the presence you have now with your kids. And if you'll be present with your kids now, you will have such a relationship with them that when they're grown, different from the trends, when they're grown, they actually want to be with me. So let's talk about that presence, that importance of presence.
Yeah. When I think through this, I've seen it in my own life, and I've seen it in other people's lives that I've walked with. And I think the statement that always resonates in my mind is, my presence as a husband and as a father is more important than what I can provide for my family. Now, let me explain that, because I'm not saying as a father, we know we're called to lead, we're called to provide, we're called to protect. We got to do all those things, right? We're called to work and to make money and to put food on the table. Those are all things that come with the responsibility of being a father. But I think what happens is sometimes we get so caught up on the career piece of it. We get so caught up on the time spent in an occupation or job that even when we get home, like you're saying, even when we get home, we're still either being affected by what happened at work, or we're still thinking about work, and we're on our phones because we're responding to emails or responding to text messages, and we're actually not really there. We're physically in the room, but we're actually not really present in the room. And so one thing that I've learned in my own life, and also just viewing others and talking with others, is I think your presence, my presence, is the most important thing that I can give to my kids. Like being not just physically in the room, but being intentionally present in their lives, which means going back to technology, we put our phones away, but even with our jobs and our careers, that when it's time to be home, it's time to be home. And I'm not bringing these things home with me. I need to be present with my kids. I need to wrestle with my kids. I need to get outside and play with my kids. We need to have meals together as a family. We need to be doing things together. My presence is more important than maybe you could say your pocketbook, right? Because I think I'll be thinking, hey, I got to provide. I got to put food on the table. I've got to make money. I got to do all these great things. And man, we've gone on these great trips and my kids have all this stuff. But at the end of the day, what your kids really want, like what you're saying, Jeff, it's right on. They really want you. And they want your presence. They don't want what you can provide for them. They want you. And even my wife and I are in a season right now where financially we're pretty tight. And so we're thinking through, for my wife, she's thinking, hey, what are some things, maybe some extra things that I can do to bring in some more money, just to kind of help with our family. And one thing that we both talked about, we had this conversation just 2 nights ago. Hey, whatever we decide we're going to do, we know it's going to mean a sacrifice. It's going to take some extra time, but we don't want it to be during the hours that we're meant to be present with our kids. For example, there's a Publix that just opened down the road from our house. She's talking about maybe doing three nights a week, doing something 7 o'clock or after at Publix, because we typically put our kids around 7 to 7:30. So that would not take her away from when she needs to be present with the kids. If I was to do anything extra, it either needs to be before the day begins or it needs to be at the end of the day when they're already asleep, because we don't want them to collect and sacrifice our presence just because we know financially we need a little bit of help right now. So even thinking through those kind of things, like, yeah, we know we got to do some extra stuff to fill in the gaps, but make sure we want to really be intentional that we're not removing ourselves from a situation in order to fill this need that we have to fill. And I know every season's different and everybody's situation is different. So I know you're hearing this, and you might be in a completely different situation. I get that. Okay, I get that. I understand that completely. There's grace for that. But as much as is in your power and your ability to remain present in your kid's life, I think that's the most important thing at all costs. So, yeah.
Yeah, I agree. And I think as parents, you just said it, the kids, we see that here when we're talking to teenagers and younger kids, they don't want necessarily the fine clothes or the game box or the new car. Yeah, those are nice. But what they really long for is mom and dad who are paying attention, who are dialed in, who see me. And I've always felt mom and dad, we have unique roles in what we impart to our kids, right? And I feel as a dad, there are many things that I impart to my kids. There are many things. But I come down to sometimes the way I describe this is it sounds simplistic, and maybe it's that way just because I like to boil down things down simplistically for clarity's sake. But the way I say it a lot of times is with my son, when I spend time with him, when we went out and throw the ball or work on a project together or build something or fix something, or he hits a home run in something that he's doing at school or whatever. When I look at him, I look him in the eye and I say to him in a way that is fully dialed in, right? And when he was small, I'd grab his face. I'd be like, right here, look, right here, so that you hear me. And that way I say, I'm so proud of you. I'm so proud of the man you're becoming. And what I impart to him as his dad is his self-esteem. That is my job, is to give him that self-esteem. When it comes to my daughter, you know, she's strong-willed, big time. And when we have the meeting of the minds or whatever, it's like, I can tell you who's going to win this one. You might as well quit talking like now. But what ends up happening is I'll spend time with her that's dedicated. So we go on a date night. and we'll go to a particular place, and it's just me and her. And there's no cell phone. It's me and her. And the things that she'll share with me and tell me. Mm. And here's what I do at some point with her is I will look at her and I will say, I just want you to know, both on the inside and the outside, you are absolutely beautiful. You are stunningly beautiful, not only in the beauty, physical beauty, but you're beautiful in your spirit and the way that you see and how you're interpreting things. Mm-hmm. And I am imparting to her self-worth.
That's right.
So if my daughter doesn't get her self-worth from her dad, mm-hmm. then she's going to seek it in another young man. Mm-hmm. At some point, she's going to be looking for that self-worth. But dads, your daughters want to hear it from you first. It doesn't matter whether you think they do or not. They want to hear it from you, dad.
That's right.
So when you look at them and say, you're absolutely beautiful. And what I will tell you, Doug, is, you know, the look in her eye when I say that, mm-hmm. there is a sparkle that comes in her eye when I say that. And it's almost, Lord, thank you for teaching me a lesson right now. Because as the dad, we also look to our Heavenly Father to know, what is my self-worth? Where do I get my intrinsic value from? I'm in a squirrel moment. We're going into theology here. But the reality is we're imparting so much to them. So I think when we're dialed in, when we're strategic about what we're doing and how we're spending the time, we are imparting to our kids something that is so invaluable.
Absolutely. I love that. I love even the idea of, I'm going to use your idea of grabbing them by the face and saying, I'm proud of you. Because I think what happens so much in this culture that we're in is so many things are performance driven. So I've got four boys. We've tried to have a girl and it just hasn't been what the Lord wanted us to have. We keep trying and we just keep getting boys. So there's an intentional piece of that, I believe, that the Lord has brought into our lives and given us these boys. So for me, I'm thinking, okay, how can I really impart in them self-esteem, strength, and courage to use these intrinsic tools that God has given them as boys and as young men and then as men later on? How can they really use those things to glorify Him? How can they use the aggression that God has given them? How can I channel that in a way that is going to be used in the right way on all the right things? And I think too, the performance side of it, like I mentioned, so much of what our culture is, your value is attached to how you perform. Your value is attached to what you do. And as a follower of Christ, my value is more attached to who I belong to rather than the things that I do. My identity is found in that I'm a child that belongs to Him rather than I do good things for Him. And I think even with our kids, they can start buying that lie that, well, my value is attached to how well I do this or I do this thing, the sport, or how well I make all the good grades, whatever it may be. They need to know that even on their worst day, you are proud of them as much as you are proud of them on their best day. And they need to hear it from you. And even just those little moments of time when you say, hey, buddy, I love you. I loved watching you play today. I love that note you just received from your teacher. I love this or I love this, whatever it may be. Those things, I think, over time really begin to help them to create and understand, this is who I am. This is what I'm created for. This is what God has called me to do, and help them understand that purpose. And as parents, I think our voice is so powerful. Not only what we say, but also what we do, but we have one of the most powerful opportunities to speak life into our kids. So I don't think we'll ever regret. We'll talk about that, I know, but we're never going to regret telling our kids we love them multiple times. We're never going to regret saying, I'm proud of you. We will regret not saying it enough as they grew up. But no one's ever going to get to the end of their life and be like, man, I just really spent too much time telling my kid how proud of them I am, or how beautiful they are, or how much I love them, or how much I care of them. No, we're never going to do that. So I think we find those opportunities in those big moments in life, but also in the mundane moments in life, of finding those opportunities where our kids have done something no one else saw. And we say, hey, I'm proud of you for doing that. I saw you open the door for them. That was awesome. Hey, I saw you give that to your brother earlier. I'm proud of you for doing that. But I'm more so I'm proud of who you are and who you are becoming. So I think those are really important for us as parents to remember.
When you say that, I'm just reminded the fact that when we speak words of life for our children, we're feeding their soul, literally.
That's right. Yeah.
Literally feeding them. And that is the parent's role. That is what we impart. And Doug, as a pastor for many years, I've sat with many adults who were working through deep wounding or deep self-esteem issues or deep self-worth issues because they had never been told that they were loved. They had never been told. In fact, I had a grown man sit in my office and weep because his father had just passed away just recently. And he said, I'm not mourning that he's gone. I'm mourning that I never heard him ever, even at the very end, tell me that he loved me. Mm-hmm. And we had to work through some possible reasons for that to help him understand how his dad had been raised and how his dad had communicated his love to him even when he couldn't say it, right? But it affects our kids into adulthood. It's important, mom and dad, be dialed in. And the other part of it too is we abdicate that responsibility to technology, but we also abdicate it to other leaders in our kids' lives, coaches. It's we give so much time and so much authority to coaches because my kids played sports. I played sports. That's an important role. We learn a lot through sports, but we don't abdicate the responsibility of parenting to a coach. Our job, right? At the end of the day, it's our job.
Yeah, absolutely. I think about sports, growing up as well and had a lot of coaches that had a lot of great influence in my life. And there's no doubt that happens, but I don't think we can outsource our parenting to any other source at all. We have to realize that, hey, I'm called to this particular role. And I think sometimes within culture too, not only technology, but just the busyness of life, there's so many things that are vying for our attention. And we want to get our kids involved in this and involved in this and involved in this. And a lot of times we can get them involved in things that actually take them away from family time or take them away from things that are more important. Our kids have played different sports. I don't know how into sports they are just yet because they're pretty young. I mean, we've exposed them to 3 or 4 different sports. Like we actually start flag football this Saturday. We've never done it before. And I've gotten roped into coaching. So here we go. That's going to be great. But so you're going to have 4 to 6-year-olds out there on the team playing flag football. It's going to be great. It's going to be chaos. It's going to be fun. But think about that. If we continue to just say, hey, you're going to do this, you're going to do this, you're going to do this, what we're doing is we're almost fragmenting out who our kids are. We're saying, hey, you're going to spend all this time doing this thing. And even if the kid enjoys it and wants to do it, I think we also at the same time have to say, but family is most important. I don't want to spend all of what we have as family time, which, like you said, is not a whole lot of time in the grand scheme of things, being in a ball field and doing this or being involved in this and being involved in this. So, yeah, we want to be involved in things. We want them to be exposed to things. We want them to learn how to do certain things. But we also got to know that being a part of this family is what's the most important. Sitting at a dinner table together as much as we can is going to be a lot more important than saying, hey, we went to 4 or 5 different practices today and mommy took you here and daddy took you here and we coordinated our schedules great and it was awesome. But yet none of that was for us spent together. So I think we just have to be careful, even with the culture when it comes to those things, not allowing other sources to take the role that we've been given.
Yeah, I agree. And as we begin to close up on this, because we could go all day,
oh,
dude.
Yeah, of course.
But I think about when our kids are small. And even as they get in the teenage years, in America, the American way is busyness means happiness. If we're busy going and doing something, so we have to, if we're not on the ball field, we live in Orlando, you're going to go out to a park or you're going to go to the beach or you go to the mountains or whatever it might be. We've got to be busy. We've got to go do right all the time. And that is a unique attribute of the American way. Honestly, we don't see that really repeated. We've got a lot of deep friendships over in Europe. If you travel some, you've seen that we do that in America. They don't do that there. Mm-hmm. So what we're afraid of, I think, which we need to embrace, is margin. Mm-hmm. So margin just simply being, it is okay to not have something scheduled, to actually be home, to do projects together, because that's when you have the meaningful conversations that have eternal consequences, is in those moments. It's in, I think of Psalm 46, I believe it is, be still and know that I am God. Yeah. And the stillness sometimes in margin is absent from our homes, absent from our lives. And we don't need to be afraid of it. Don't be afraid of it. You know, embrace it. It is okay to not have, to not live in the minivan. It's okay to be home. It's okay for the kids to learn how to express things in margins. That's a lot of times when their imagination, they use their imagination to create worlds, to create forts. My son used to have a Star Wars universe built into which I would be invited. I would be the Sith. We'd come in. It's just, it was just so much fun. We would have so much fun. I think that's that last part. And there's so much more. But Doug, man, this has been so good. I appreciate the conversation.
Awesome. Yeah.
And we'll come back, because I think there's a part B to this as well, in that as we're raising our kids, understanding culture and what culture is imposing on our kids as truth, not just as, hey, here's some ideologies, imposing as truth, is that next thing that we probably could talk about some and examine some more, just to help our parents be equipped and be ready to send their kids to not just survive, but to thrive.
That's right.
Because that's what God wants to do, right?
That's right.
Just to thrive.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yep. Dude, thank you so much for being with us.
And it's been great. It's been great.
Yep. And I look forward, you and I will be connecting, I know, again here soon, and hopefully we'll do the same thing on some future podcasts.
Yeah, man, I would love it. It's been a great opportunity. And anytime we can be an encouragement to parents. One thing I'll just close with before you wrap things up is, there's a quote I've read in the book. I can't remember the context, but it was, don't fail to do something because you can't do everything, right? Don't fail to do something because you can't do everything. So you don't have to have it all figured out right now, right? You don't have to have a whole plan written out right now. Just start small, start somewhere, create a habit, create a rhythm with your kids, and just start there. Take baby steps and just go through and trust the process that the Lord is going to use these small steps of obedience to really produce internal impact and investment in your kids' lives.
So good. Agree 100% and stated so well. Not much more I can add to it. So thank you for joining us for Between Faith and Reason. And I'm Jeff Lawrence here with Doug Campbell. And thank you for joining us. And we'll catch you next time. God bless. As we wrap up today's conversation, I want to bring us back to something that's important and something that we need to always consider. We're not raising children for the moment. We're raising them for eternity. And the good news is that God never expected you to do this alone, or perfectly, or without moments of weakness. Your frustration does not disqualify you. Your fatigue does not surprise God. Your inconsistency does not undo His faithfulness. Parenting was never meant to be the pursuit of perfection. It's the pursuit of presence. Presence with God. Presence with your kids. Presence with the moment He's placed you in. So if you feel stretched thin right now, if you feel like the days are blurring together, if you're carrying guilt from how you responded yesterday or even this morning, I want you to hear this. God meets parents in the mess, and He will take the mess and make it miraculous. He steps into real homes, real emotions, real challenges, and He gives daily bread, grace for today, not because you've earned it, but because He loves your kids even more than you do. And He loves you enough to walk beside you and you raise them. So here's the hope. You may not see the results yet. You may not feel like anything is happening, but every moment of patience, every prayer whispered under your breath, every apology you offer, every scripture you speak over tired hearts, These are seeds, eternal seeds, and God is faithful to grow what you plant. So go back into your home today with a renewed heart. Lift your eyes from the immediate to the eternal. And remember, parenting isn't about getting everything right. It's about inviting God into everything. He's shaping your children, yes, and He's shaping you too. Thanks for joining us today on Between Faith and Reason. And a special thank you again to our guest, Doug Campbell, for the wisdom and encouragement as a dad that he shared. If this episode blessed you, share it with a parent who could use a reminder that they're not alone on this journey. And until next time, stay steady, stay hopeful, and keep leaning into both faith and reason as you lead the ones God has entrusted to you. Thanks again, and God bless.
Thank you for joining us today, and we hope you found it inspirational, informative, and enlightening. Please be sure to follow us on Facebook and Instagram. You can also visit us at foundationacademy.net/behindfaithandreason. Thank you to our sponsors, Foundation Academy, where they have been building a foundation for life since 1958 in partnership with The Observer, you, your neighbors, your neighborhood.